World Ain't Ready, a Lee Miz fanfic written by Idiopathic Smile and read by Full Day's Drive. Chapter 3. When Grantaire returns to the ABC table, they rearrange themselves to make room for him, which is nice. His new spot is right next to Enjolras, which is something he'll have to get used to. He sits down, glancing carefully to the right, but Enjolras isn't looking at him. Enjolras is staring at the label on his bottle of tea like it's about to start wrapping the solution to world hunger. It's a very particular look. Enjolras' reverie doesn't seem like it's ending anytime soon, and it's not like Grantaire would know what to do if it did. Instead, he picks up his sandwich and takes a bite. Around them, the usual cafeteria din has picked up again. The room is so loud, it takes a moment to realize that nobody at the table is speaking. He looks up. Combeferre, Courfeyrac, Jeanne, Musichetta, and Marius look intently back. He swallows. "So, hey, guys," says Grantaire, in the lightest voice he can muster. "What's new with you?" "Corf got a guitar Marius starts. But he breaks off, distracted by Musichetta lunging across the table to slug Grantaire on the arm. Her fist connects solidly with his bicep, hard enough that he can't tell if it's a joke or if she's genuinely trying to hurt him. He rubs the stinging skin and takes a few deep breaths. "Oh my God, R," she's saying. And he'd forgotten about that dumb Bandcamp nickname. But at least it implies her intentions aren't murder. "Is this why you've been such an asshole this year?" "I'm always an asshole," says Grantaire, the words almost leaving his mouth on autopilot. "Where have you been?" Under normal circumstances, that would be the end of it. Today, Musichetta just rolls her eyes. "No," she points accusingly at him. "Don't you start that." But she's holding her mouth like she's trying not to smile, and after a few seconds, she caves. "It's just awesome to finally be able to talk about this." Musichetta rolls her eyes again. "I mean, I know, it's like everyone says, some boys act like jerks when they like someone, but oh my God, you must like him so much, because you've been unbearable." Grantaire's hands freeze on a sandwich. Musichetta is not a cruel person, which means this is going to be so, so awkward in about 30 seconds when the truth comes to light. He glances over his shoulder. Maybe he shouldn't have just burned his bridges with the skateboarders. He's left himself no escape route. Musichetta is still talking, because there is no God. "Like, now that we're finally done with all the bullshit pigtail pulling, can I just say—" But she startles and cuts off mid-word, shooting a sharp look at Courfeyrac. It doesn't take a detective to realize he's nudged her, possibly kicked her under the table. Is the ABC always this violent at lunch? Or is Grantaire just a bad influence? He wonders. Courfeyrac gestures her closer, using the hand that isn't holding Jeanne's hand under the table. With no stealth whatsoever, he inclines his head in her direction, whispering something that audibly includes the phrase, "Gonna scare him away." Like Grantaire is some tiny woodland creature they're luring out with breadcrumbs. Everyone else looks in other directions, politely pretending not to notice, although there's no way they don't. Courfeyrac sucks at whispering. Grantaire downs some root beer. He inspects his lunch. It occurs to him that he's not sure what kind of sandwich he's eating. He can't remember what he packed yesterday, and although he's about a quarter of the way through, he hasn't registered anything beyond rye bread and an edge of nausea. To distract himself, he tries to make a list of things he's feeling that aren't dread. Gratitude towards Courfeyrac, that this particular train of conversation has been safely derailed. Annoyance at being treated like a fragile baby deer. Above all else, a deep and profound confusion at Enjolras' silence. Jeanne had said Enjolras was different when not in "To arms, comrades!" mode, but he never mentioned that the guy was basically a mime. It's weird. Grantaire is missing the hell out of those tirades right now. "He wasn't that bad. Come on," says Jeanne now. Musichetta shakes her head. "Jeanne, you remember middle school? He was the sweetest kid. I was wondering what the hell was going on when he showed up and started being such an incredible ass." "So," says Combeferre, voice deceptively casual. You two are dating now? Grantaire looks to his left, waiting for Enjolras to explain that this is all an elaborate hoax being perpetrated on the school at large, but Enjolras trusts on Caps's green tea and says, mildly, he asked me out, didn't he? Grantaire stares at him. Granted, a crowded cafeteria is not the best place for Enjolras to let his friends in on the plan, but the longer they delay this, the more people will say things they'll regret later. Enjolras glances in his direction for a moment, an almost reflexive flick of the eyes, and Grantaire tries to communicate with his face how totally messed up this is, but Combeferre picks up on it from across the table, brow furrowed in concern or suspicion, so there's no option but to rein it back in. That's so great, you guys, says Marius, beaming, and God bless that kid's allergy for subtext. He doesn't even seem to realize how excruciating this conversation is. Good for him. As if on cue, Courfeyrac flings down his fork and shouts, I called it! He draws himself up to full height and glances around the group, radiating triumph and smugness. For the record, I totally called it. Nobody steps forward to affirm what Courfeyrac may or may not have called. Someone back me up here, he says. He didn't call it, says Jeanne. Traitor, says Courfeyrac. But the word might as well have tiny cartoon hearts floating around it. Man, I wish I'd put it in writing. I don't remember you calling it, says Combeferre. I know I did, Courfeyrac insists. Come on, Marius, help me out. Wasn't I saying something about this a few weeks ago? Marius sips his Capri Sun, meditative. No, you really weren't, he says at last. But Courfeyrac is undaunted. No, seriously. After the incident with the tambourine. I know I said something to someone. Those two are definitely going to get together. I know for a fact you never said they'd date, Marius insists. And with that, he vaults to the number one spot on Grantaire's list of favorite people. Seriously, Grantaire may throw him a parade. You said someday they'd snap and start angrily making out on a desk, adds Marius. Totally different. And Grantaire's opinion reverses so fast it breaks the sound barrier. I should have put money on it, says Courfeyrac mournfully. Jeanne, we should have... When did this start? Says Musichetta. In retrospect, it explains so much. Her face lights up in sudden epiphany. I guess now we know the real reason you kept coming to meetings, huh? Grantaire feels like he's just swallowed a bucket of ice water. Why, for the love of God, did it not occur to him until just now that one side effect of pretending to have a crush on Enjolras is that people might be smart enough to piece together his actual crush on Enjolras. It's like every nightmare of showing up to school naked, except worse, because there is zero hope of waking up. He can't look Musichetta in the eye. He sure as hell can't make himself look at Enjolras. Instead, he turns his focus to his hands, where he's holding his can of root beer so tightly the metal is starting to warp. Musichetta grins. Everything is making sense. This is so awesome. Oh, hey, Grantaire, is this what you... So, Courfeyrac, let's hear more about this guitar, he says loudly. It sounds fascinating, and also like a thing I'd like to discuss in greater detail for, say, the next... He glances up at the clock. 21 minutes and, 15 seconds. Combeferre, Courfeyrac, Jeanne, Musichetta, and Marius all give him variations on the same perplexed look. Guys, he says weakly, some privacy here? You asked him out in front of a third of the school, says Combeferre dryly, and Grantaire winces, because that is an excellent point. Yeah, he mumbles. And now, maybe I'm wishing I'd been smarter about the whole thing. For example, by doing this pretty much any other way. No, it's fine, says Enjolras. It was fine. It's fine. Grantaire stares at him. Marius actually claps his hands together and makes that high-pitched noise again, as if Enjolras has turned into a video of a sneezing baby panda. Enjolras, what did you say in his car? Says Combeferre suddenly. What? Says Grantaire. You mentioned something he'd said to you earlier. Which, I think we were all having a mini-stroke, says Musichetta. At Grantaire's questioning look, she adds, You said Enjolras was right about something. I'm not sure how he even heard you over the sound of hell freezing over. He's right about stuff all the time, Grantaire protests. Anjelros knows nearly as many statistics as Combeferre. When it comes to worldview and, like, opinions, the guy's delusional. But in terms of backing up each point of his insane rhetoric with factoids, he definitely does his homework. I bet right now he could tell you, like, the capital of Portugal without breaking a sweat. Lisbon, says Anjelros, almost involuntary. And Grantaire laughs. Anjelros gives him a surprised-looking smile. Grantaire is helplessly smiling back, before he remembers that the whole thing is just a sham, and Anjelros is pretending to like him for reasons of social justice. He covers for whatever his face is doing by taking another big bite of his sandwich. He chews. There's some kind of lunch meat in here, he thinks. Either lunch meat or wet cheese. Musichetta clears her throat. So what I think happened in Grantaire's car? Oh? Says Courfeyrac. Do tell. Grantaire works his jaw frantically, but he already knows he won't be able to swallow fast enough to stop this. I think yesterday, Anjelros confessed all his feelings, but Grantaire wasn't sure he wanted to make the leap and come out of the closet. And then for some reason, today he had a change of heart. Sure, says Courfeyrac. He looked across the room and saw the way the fluorescent light set off Anjelros's hair. So he decided he could only fix it with a big, cheesy grand gesture, says Musichetta. It's like something from a movie, says Marius. And Grantaire nods hysterically because, yes, it is. And the common factor is that it's fiction. And then Anjelros says, in a strangled voice, yes, that's exactly how it happened. You're right. Grantaire raises his eyebrows at him, and Anjelros raises his eyebrows back, in a way that somehow manages to convey, don't blame me. You were just nodding like a crazy person, so I assumed you wanted to go along with it. And also, do you have a more convincing story? It's a pretty impressive maneuver. Aw, says Musichetta. So, says Anjelros, Courfeyrac, about this guitar. And then, bless Courfeyrac's one-track mind, they are treated to several blissful minutes of something about Stratocasters and amps and reverb. Marius has taken piano lessons since elementary school, and so knows the relevant questions to ask, and Grantaire finally starts to relax. Yeah, so all we need to do now is find a bassist and a drummer, and we're good to go, says Courfeyrac. He smiles. Oh, and I need to learn how to play the guitar. I can show you the chords my cousin taught me, says Jeanne. It won't take long, because I only know two. C and E minor. E minor is an important chord, replies Courfeyrac. They're sort of staring into each other's eyes. It's hard to watch. Grantaire almost wishes they'd start actually making out, so he can have an excuse to look away. Grantaire plays the drums, says Musichetta, and Courfeyrac's head snaps around. You do? He says. Grantaire coughs. Dude. Snare drum in middle school band. That is not the same thing. You did what? Says Anjelros, almost sharply. Grantaire swivels toward him, readying for a confrontation. But Anjelros doesn't have his preparing for battle face on. Any of them. He's just looking. Yeah, Grantaire says with a crooked smile. You know me. The only thing I love more than school spirit is marching. Anjelros clearly doesn't know what to do with that, and Grantaire assumes that will be the end of it. But Musichetta barrels on. He was so cute, she says. It was before his growth spurt, so he was just this tiny little guy with a mouthful of braces and an amazing haircut, dragging around a drum that was almost bigger than him. It wasn't almost bigger, it was a snare drum, Grantaire protests. They're literally the smallest drum you can play in marching band. Musichetta snorts. You could have fit inside it. If I was a contortionist, maybe. Can we go back to the part where Grantaire was in middle school marching band? Says Anjelros. Every year, says Musichetta gleefully. Except for the semester where he did the school musical. You were in the school musical? It's weird to think about this period of his life. Grantaire generally tries not to. You didn't tell him about this stuff? Says Courfeyrac. Anjelros, how much do you know about your boyfriend? Give him a break. We've been dating for less than 10 minutes, says Grantaire. Anjelros blinks. Thank you, he says, glaring at Courfeyrac. So, the musical? Marius prompts. Grantaire rakes his hands through his hair in frustration. Come on, guys. He's your friend. Shouldn't you be telling embarrassing stories about him? Although, he kind of can't imagine anyone having any dirt on Enjolras. Enjolras belongs to that rare and privileged race of beautiful people who never look bad in photos or get anything stuck in their teeth, or make huge mistakes that ruin years of their lives in stupidly permanent ways. Oh, that's easy, says Courfeyrac, with an impatient shake of his head. Let's see. He's failed his driver's test 3 times. He still doesn't have a license. He doesn't know any music from this decade. And one time he walked into a wall because he was thinking about affirmative action. It was a door, protests Enjolras, but there's something like a smile toward the corner of his mouth. It has the feeling of a well-worn argument, comfortable between friends. It was the door to the janitor's closet, Courfeyrac explains, and it was locked. You could make the argument that if a door's always locked, it effectively is a wall, says Combeferre, like, spiritually. Not a line of thinking Grantaire tends to hear from sober people, but nobody at the table seems to find it unusual. Sure, says Enjolras. What musical was it? Marius answers immediately. Peter Pan. I did tech crew. It was fun. So, Grantaire, Enjolras says. And for once, it's not scolding or accusing. It's just his name, spoken like any other friend's name. Enjolras tilts his head, and his eyes are on Grantaire. Focused, but without a trace of anger.
Were you in tech crew too?
He asks. Grantaire's adrenaline doesn't know what to do with itself. His heart is pounding. Out of habit, he assumes. It's disorienting. Grantaire swallows.
It was a long time ago, he hedges.
He was Peter Pan, says Courfeyrac, in a voice choked with laughter.
Corf was Captain Hook, Grantaire blurts out. But the misdirection goes nowhere. Enjolras coughs.
Peter Pan? Seriously? That's the danger of trying out for school plays when you're a dude, says Grantaire. Only, like, 6 guys ever audition, and then there's always a billion male parts to fill. They were all but knocking boys unconscious and stuffing their limp bodies into pirate costumes.
They could have cast girls in some of the boy parts, Musichetta points out. Courfeyrac and Grantaire shake their heads.
The director said it would mess with the realism, says Courfeyrac.
Of Peter Pan, says Jeanne with a snort.
It was a strange time in our lives, Courfeyrac adds in a solemn tone. He spoils the effect by laughing, and leaning forward conspiratorially.
Oh man, so funny is Grantaire's story.
No, moans Grantaire. No, how is this happening? Courfeyrac, wouldn't you rather talk about your good... So it's the last show. And it's the very last scene, right? Where all the adventure has happened, and they're back in the nursery, and Peter's saying goodbye to Wendy. And it's this, like, super bittersweet dramatic moment.
Oh God, says Grantaire. He knows what's coming.
Courfeyrac almost took his eye out trying to pick his nose with his hook hand, he says desperately, appealingly.
It occurs to him that he has spent the last several months all but training everyone in the ABC to ignore his attempts at distraction. Maybe this whole thing is karma kicking him in the ass. It's not a pleasant thought.
Yeah, but that's no problem, says Enjolras, dismissive. Worst case scenario, he gets an eye patch. He's already playing a pirate.
There's a flaw in your logic, says Grantaire.
I know there is.
Courfeyrac, you were saying?
Says Combeferre. And Jeanne prompts.
Bittersweet dramatic moment?
Courfeyrac grins, clearly relishing the attention. There's going to be no stopping the story now that the focus is back on him. A pox on all theater kids.
And Grantaire's got the flying harness on under his costume, Courfeyrac continues. Because he's supposed to leap out the window and soar away majestically. So he says his last line, and he jumps up, you know, very sprite-like, very in character, and the people backstage yank up the ropes.
Oh, hey, says Marius brightly. I remember this.
But they yank the ropes too hard, so instead of sailing through the open window, he goes careening right into the backdrop. It's a stage set, it's made of plywood, and from the waist down, he smacks into this thing, full speed, like a bird hitting the side of your house, like...
Courfeyrac claps his hands together.
Wham!
And yes,
Grantaire remembers this too. It's difficult to forget how it feels to take a sheet of plywood to the nuts. It was lucky he hadn't been in the habit of cursing back then, or he would have been suspended for life.
And meanwhile, says Courfeyrac, we're on the wings waiting for curtain call, so we can see the wall almost collapsing. He hit it so hard.
The whole set were shaking, Marius confirms. We were afraid it was going to fall over.
It's reverberating, like an earthquake.
Courfeyrac mimes a shaking wall frame.
And from the audience? You just hear this collective gasp, and nobody has any idea what to do. Like suddenly the play has kind of stopped happening? And everyone's watching this little kid, clearly in pain, just dangling from a rope, whimpering.
But Grantaire, tiny 13-year-old Grantaire, is such a goddamn professional. The audience is barely breathed in again, and he just shouts,
Courfeyrac flings an arm out.
Farewell, Wendy. Sorry about your house. And the curtain falls.
In my defense, says Grantaire, I was thinking about affirmative action. Everyone cracks up. Everyone cracks up, including Enjolras. They are laughing, smiling, at a thing he said. This is the weirdest moment of his life, and there are currently a lot of contenders for the title.
Out of lack of anything better to do, Grantaire picks up a sandwich and takes another bite, still not tasting it. He thinks mustard and ham might be involved. He looks around at the table, as the ABC kids struggle to get their breath back, and back down at his lunch. There are maybe 3 bites of sandwich left.
Grantaire resigns himself. He is never going to know what it contained. He knows a lost cause when he sees one.
Everyone is packing up their stuff. Enjolras has barely touched his food. Someone should make him eat something. Someone he'd actually listen to. When Jehan grabs Grantaire's sleeve.
So, Grantaire, says Jehan, in what he must think is a casual voice.
Monday. Same time, same place?
What?
Lunch, Jehan enunciates. You, us, food? Probably more that's what she said jokes than you care to hear. Surprisingly, Musiquette is the worst offender, but, you know. Lunch every day with Enjolras and his friends. Would it have killed Grantaire to think this through at all? Yes, being in Enjolras' presence is like basking in the light of a grumpy sun. But that's for meetings. For sitting in the back of the room at a safe distance, unnoticed. Although that's not strictly true, because Enjolras had seen him drawing in his notebook, and his face still burns at that, somehow. Grantaire's not sure how he's expected to deal with this. Sharing a table. Sitting knee to knee. Constantly at risk for falling under that steely blue gaze. That judgment. A whole week of this. Jesus.
I don't know if I can, Grantaire starts.
Just as Enjolras is saying, of course he will. They stare at each other for a moment, Enjolras giving him an inscrutable look. If Grantaire had to guess, it means something like, I am already doubting your commitment to this plan. There's no way it looks properly boy-friendly, so he forces himself to smile gently, like he's sad about missing this spectacular shitshow. Eponine, he says, by way of explanation. I can't leave her alone. Enjolras snorts. She's not a puppy.
She can sit here too, says Courfeyrac with a shrug.
Hell, let's make it a party.
If everyone's okay, says Grantaire. Courfeyrac snickers.
Okay. Show of hands. Who's in favor of the hot goth chick joining our table?
It's sarcasm, but the group has been conditioned by hours worshipping at the altar of the democratic process, and they start in on the vote before they can help themselves. It's unanimous, which is maybe not a surprise. Combeferre's hand is the first up, which maybe is. The bell rings soon after, and people start to disperse. Musiquette has got a history quiz she needs to get ready for. Marius's next class is on the opposite side of the school. Grantaire waves them off, rolls the remnants of his lunch into his paper bag, and chucks it into the trash. When he turns around, Enjolras is standing there.
Hey, Enjolras says.
We still need to talk about how we're going to... He inclines his head in a way that's got to mean something like,
figure out how to navigate this whole pretending to be in love gambit.
And Grantaire nods. My car again? He says. after the meeting. Remembering what Courfeyrac had said, he adds, I can give you a ride home if you, It's only then that he stops to wonder if Andoras might be sensitive about not being able to drive yet. It doesn't square so well with the whole fearless leader thing. He clears his throat. If you want. At the very least, it's a pretty good excuse to talk where nobody will... Andoras gives him a sharp look, eyes darting pointedly around the cafeteria, and Grantaire fights the urge to roll his eyes. Nobody's standing close enough to listen in on their conversation. True, several kids are staring at them like zoo animals, but it's not like someone's going to lip-read one out-of-context remark from Grantaire and start screaming, Imposters! Chacus! Yeah, Andoras says, nodding jerkily. That makes sense. Great, says Grantaire. Yeah. And oh god, are they back to the Sestina of Doom? Very quietly and without moving his mouth, Andoras says, People are watching. And this surprises you how? We should... Andoras starts to take a step closer, then hesitates, and Grantaire gets it. Andoras wants to do this well, because it's for a cause, and also because Andoras does everything well. In order to do this well, he needs to be convincing. In order to be convincing, they probably shouldn't be saying goodbye standing 2 feet apart. People who are actually dating tend to be pretty okay touching each other. A kiss on the cheek, or something. A hug? Grantaire isn't sure, but some gesture is probably called for. Andoras's overwhelming impulse to be perfect is at war with his impulse to treat Grantaire like toxic waste. Grantaire laughs. It's funny from a certain angle, he thinks. A not-so-charitable part of his brain doesn't feel any real desire to bail Andoras out of the situation.
We could shake hands, Grantaire offers in an undertone. Seems fitting.
The whole thing is, after all, a transaction. Andoras glares at him. Yeah, okay, this has been fun, says Grantaire, turning away. Wait, says Andoras. Please. He grabs at Grantaire's sleeve, and Grantaire is struck by a sudden inspiration. A stupid inspiration, most likely. Grantaire frees his wrist, reaches out, and squeezes Andoras's hand, in what hopefully looks to the outside world like affection. He holds the grip for a long moment, schools his expression into something smile-like. See you at the meeting, says Grantaire. See you at the meeting, Andoras echoes. Grantaire is out the door and down the hallway, before he has a chance to see the look on Andoras's face. Varel is waiting at the door of Con Econ with a congratulatory fist bump. It's freaky. Grantaire knows for a fact that Varel has bee lunch. While today's drama was unfolding, Varel was in woodshop, on the other side of the school. Somehow, in the space of a single passing period, he still heard all about it. Barrel never gives the impression of trying to keep up on school gossip, but he is always, always in the loop. How he pulls it off is a mystery. Grantaire suspects witchcraft. When someone's got dark magic at their disposal, returning their fist bump is common sense. Grantaire dutifully bumps back and takes a seat. The rest of the school probably still hasn't heard, which means he's going to get a short reprieve. He pulls out his MP3 player and earbuds just in case. Barrel trails after him, looking bored. Hey, he says. You should bring us tacos again today. You know, to celebrate. Grantaire snorts. Wow, dude, I'm touched. Hey, man, I was rooting for you two, Barrel protests. Grantaire must make a skeptical face at that, because Barrel grins and says, Yeah, not really. Guess I always assumed he was a eunuch. But I'm happy for you. So just think how happy I'd be if there were tacos. Grantaire involuntarily flashes back to the look of pure fury and disgust on Andoras's face last week. He swallows, forcing his voice into something light.
Someone else's turn to pull snack duty, I think, he says.
Huh, says Barrel. He squints into the middle distance, makes a thoughtful clicking noise with his tongue.
Marius has got home ec this semester, he volunteers. We play our cards right, he could bring us cupcakes.
Like all his cupcakes aren't going straight to Cosette, says Grantaire.
More of them than she could ever eat. Embarrassingly frosted.
Barrel sighs. Love is the worst, he says bleakly. Amen, thinks Grantaire. He doesn't say it out loud, though, for obvious reasons. Barrel drums his fingers on the desk.
Hey, says Barrel suddenly. Speaking of things that are the worst, did you get 6 or 7 on the homework?
There was homework.
Grantaire says it mostly out of instinct, though. He actually did the assignment a few hours ago in Earth Science, because he was bored as hell, and it had seemed like a bad idea to let his mind wander. After a little digging in his backpack, he finds the worksheet and smooths it out on his desk. 6 and 7 aren't pretty, but they are present.
Okay, pull up a chair.
This earns another grin from Bowerell. Best friends for life, he says. Bowerell's got the most conditional sense of friendship he's ever seen. It's awesome. After Con-Econ is algebra, which is, well, word's definitely gotten around. Grantaire keeps his earbuds in for the whole hour, music as loud as it will go. It drowns out most of what people are trying to say to him, and anyway, it's not like his math grade's going to suffer more than it already does. The battery on his MP3 player dies in the hallway. It's shitty timing, because 3 minutes into world mythology, Eddie Greer raises his hand.
Mr. Clark, he says, can I move? Grantaire's making me uncomfortable.
Grantaire's not bothering anyone. He's slumped at his desk, hood of his sweatshirt pulled down to his eyebrows, trying to draw.
Please, Mr. Clark? Eddie's saying.
Mr. Clark makes a confused face, but the rest of the class start shifting around in their chairs and giggling, some nervously, some in anticipation. Grantaire slumps further. Fucking teenagers.
You should probably, stay where you are, says Mr. Clark,
eyes not leaving the computer screen. He must have a riveting game of solitaire going on. God, this school is a joke. Eddie raises his voice.
But Mr. Clark,
he whines,
I don't feel safe here. Grantaire likes boys.
More jostling. More giggling. Grantaire grits his teeth and stares at the surface of his desk. He tries to think back on how he dealt with this kind of shit before, back in freshman year. Fighting back hadn't helped. He remembers that much. Running to the teacher had been a colossal waste of time.
Mr. Clark,
Eddie shouts.
Okay, says Jeon loudly.
Grantaire blinks. He looks up. Across the room, Jeon is flinging all his stuff. Notebook, pens, textbooks, scraps of paper, copy of the Odyssey, into his backpack. Jeon's bag is dark gray, utilitarian, which strikes Grantaire as weird. It doesn't seem like something Jeon would own. It's also not big enough to hold all the random detritus Jeon seems to gather everywhere he goes. It takes several long seconds for him to cram everything inside. His motions are abrupt, twitchy.
Okay,
Jeon says again.
That's...
He swings his backpack onto one shoulder, and Grantaire's first thought is that Jeon is leaving, has finally realized that the stupid class is not worth his time. Grantaire will miss the hell out of him, but on the other hand, he certainly understands the impulse to cut and run in these kind of... Jeon stalks across the room. Stalks the wrong way, away from the door, and towards where Eddie is still making a big show of pulling faces and tossing his head. He stops directly in front of Eddie's desk. Move, Jeon commands. Jeon's sweater looks like something a grandma would knit if she'd laced her tea with LSD. It's about 3 sizes too big, and covered with ladybugs. Their wings are red and spangly, their mouths, cheerful little V's of yarn. Somehow, Jeon still gives the impression of a person about to fuck shit up. Grantaire has no idea what's happening anymore. He's not the only one. The look on Eddie's face is sort of amazing.
What?
Eddie croaks.
Move,
Jeon says, resolute. He sounds nervous, but not afraid, just the same level of uncomfortable he always is if he's talking in front of groups.
You don't want to sit with him? I do. Move, we're switching places.
Nobody's moving,
says Mr. Clark from his desk.
There are assigned seats for a reason.
Jeon clenches his jaw.
Yeah,
he says.
And I'm reassigning them.
I'm not going to go sit, Eddie snarls.
What, in my chair?
Says Jeon, lip curling derisively.
Rhinestones aren't contagious. You'll be fine.
He raises an arm and points behind himself, at the vacated seat.
Seriously, move. Everyone will be happier.
There's a long pause. Mr. Clark clears his throat.
Sean,
he says,
I'm going to have to ask you to sit down.
Jeon is too absorbed in his contest of wills to even turn around.
Working on it,
he says, terse.
In your assigned seat.
You can ask, Jeon mutters.
Jeon, if you keep this up,
says Mr. Clark gravely, portentously,
you'll have to go to the principal's office.
He nods to himself with the air of a man who has just played the ultimate trump card, looking over at Jeon expectantly, eyebrows raised.
I'm not going, says Jeon.
Mr. Clark sputters.
Jeon!
Jeon whirls around.
Nobody ever, ever gets in trouble in this class. They act out all the time, but you know they wouldn't listen to you anyway, so you let them do whatever.
His fists are clenched at his sides.
Do you know that the things people have said to me in this room? And how many times have you tried to stop?
He takes a deep breath.
But me, when I act out, I'm supposed to face the consequences. You know, Jean's a good kid, he'll do what he's told.
His lip curls.
You think that because I follow the rules, I respect you. But I don't. I behave because I'm here to learn. Nobody in this room respects you less than I do. So yeah. I'm not walking to the office, and I don't think you're going to carry me. I'm going to wait here until he...
Jeon jerks his head at Eddie.
Gets up and moves. So we can all do what we're supposed to be doing, which is to read a very, very dumbed-down retelling of the Trojan War.
I... Detention, says Mr. Clark.
For the rest of the week.
Jeon sneers.
It's Friday. Jeon, you have detention for all of next week.
Sure, says Jeon.
Sounds good.
He turns back around to Eddie.
These are comfortable shoes,
he adds quietly. He rocks back onto his heels.
I can stand here for a long time.
Eddie's hands convulse on his notebook.
Fine,
he says.
Freak.
He bolts out of his chair and across the room. Jeon sits down next to Grantaire, slightly out of breath. He pulls the textbook from his backpack.
We were on page 57,
he says mildly.
Paragraph 3.
Whoa, says Grantaire in an undertone.
Hey, Grantaire,
says Jeon. Then, glancing at Grantaire's still-in-progress drawing,
is that another duck?
It is. Hermes this time, with a winged helmet and a little jetpack. Grantaire pushes it towards Jeon's new desk, so he can have a better look.
You can have it as soon as I'm done with the feathers,
he says.
If anyone's earned a duck today, it's you.
When the bell rings, Jeon hitches his backpack onto his elbow.
Walk with me?
Grantaire is struggling to invent a reason to lag behind, so Jeon and Courfeyrac can have their usual pre-meeting quality time. But with everything else happening today, he's caught off guard.
You haven't thought of anything to leave in your car today, have you?
Asks Jeon. His tone is so nonchalant, Grantaire is nodding along before he's worked out the implications. Jeon knows about the cupiding. Busted.
Sorry, Grantaire mumbles.
Jeon shrugs.
It's fine. I'm not mad, I promise.
He heads out the door, gesturing for Grantaire to follow. And what the hell? Given what's just gone down, it's the least Grantaire can do. Besides, it's been too long since he's gotten a look at that creepy Walt Whitman poster.
I mean, says Jeon, as they maneuver through the hallway-clogging end-of-day yay-it's-Friday crowds. For one thing, it's not like I mind walking alone with him. But at some point, it becomes an issue of, well, you don't need to do it every time.
What? Says Grantaire. So I can follow you two around playing romantic accordion songs?
Play it on your snare drum, says Jeon with a snort.
Grantaire opens his mouth to reply, And Jeanne adds, No, seriously. Are you going to tease me about that now? Today? After... Grantaire winces. Yes. Right. That was the dumbest way you could have possibly come out, you know, says Jeanne, almost gently. I mean, from a pragmatic point of view. It was stupid. Believe me, I've reached that conclusion, says Grantaire. Sweet, yes. Jeanne opens his locker door. But stupid. Sweet, but stupid. Are we talking about Grantaire? Says Courfeyrac, swooping out of nowhere with typical drama kid flair. I'm not sweet, says Grantaire, almost to himself. He assumes they're heading over, but when he turns around, Jeanne and Courfeyrac haven't moved. So, says Jeanne. He shuts the door of his locker and leans against it, sharing a look with Courfeyrac, who nods and takes a deep breath. Grantaire glances between them uneasily. This has the feeling of something planned. He's only half-joking when he says, Is this an intervention, or... We were talking, says Jeanne. Me and Corf. And look, what you did today in the lunchroom... Yeah, it wasn't the smartest thing. He smiles. But it was kind of cool, too. Never seen Enjolras speechless before, Courfeyrac cuts in. Next time you do something like that, you've got to film it, because Bossuet straight up didn't believe me. Anyway, Jeanne adds, a little pointedly, in case things get... Well, yeah. You know, the Eddies of the world and all that. We're here for you, okay? The ABC is here for you. Courfeyrac nods, sincerely. It's weird to see, and Grantaire is hit by a tidal wave of guilt. The whole point of the stupid charade is to help them, and instead, they're putting themselves on the line to help him, all for the sake of a giant lie. That's, Grantaire swallows. I appreciate what you're, I do. It's great of you guys, but I don't... You don't... It's fine. He swallows again. It isn't working so great. What the hell even is today? We should get going. Don't want to be late for the meeting, he mumbles, turning away. Jeanne and Courfeyrac follow him down the hallway. Yeah, says Jeanne, as though Grantaire hadn't spoken. But we're going to anyway. Grantaire shakes his head. I can handle this. It's okay. They catch up with him in a few more steps, Courfeyrac bumping his shoulder companionably. You can't stop us from being this badass, dude, says Courfeyrac. It's our nature. His tone is light, easy, like he's offering to lend a DVD or something. Grantaire wants to shake him. Courfeyrac strides forward, unconcerned. Then he looks ahead for a moment, and Grantaire sees his eyes flick over the crowd, as if scanning for possible threats. Jeanne's face is shrewd, too. There's still a smudge of pasta sauce on his sleeve. It occurs to Grantaire that both of them know precisely what they're getting into. He swallows again, because good lord does he not deserve this. At the same time, he doesn't think they're going to let him turn it down, at least not today. Grantaire has witnessed Jeanne's stubbornness firsthand, after all, which reminds him. So, speaking of badass, says Grantaire. Courfeyrac, allow me to fill you in on some recent events regarding one Sir Jeanne Prévert. Oh? Says Courfeyrac, his standard grin back out in full force. Jeanne covers his face in his hands. It wasn't a thing, he mutters. Dude, says Grantaire. He spreads his arms wide, almost knocking a freshman in the face, but whatever. Doubt that the stars are fire? Doubt that the sun doth move, but don't doubt for one flipping second that it was a thing. Recounting the saga of Jeanne's schoolroom defiance carries them all the way to Ms. Hucheloup's room. Grantaire doesn't know what's more fun, watching Courfeyrac all but swoon at tales of his crush's heroics, or watching Jeanne blush himself into new and exciting shades of burgundy. Jeanne Prévert, the sophomore who wouldn't sit down, says Grantaire. Jeanne Prévert, terror of shitty teachers everywhere. Not to be outdone, Courfeyrac chimes in with, Jeanne Prévert, champion of the people, defender of the weak. Hey, says Grantaire. Jeanne is trying mightily not to grin, but there's a definite hop to his step. You guys are insane, he says.
Jeanne Prévert, destroyer of worlds, says Grantaire.
Jeanne Prévert, rebel with a cause. They reach the door of Miss Hucheloup's room. Grantaire spins around and clasps his hands over his heart.
Jeanne Prévert, my hero.
Jeanne laughs. Courfeyrac presses his lips together.
Careful, don't want to make your boyfriend jealous, he says.
And his tone is light, but there's the slightest purposeful quality to it. At the word boyfriend, Enjolras' gaze snaps over to them from where he'd been writing something on the board.
Grantaire tries to look away. It doesn't work.
Hey, says Grantaire, holding up a hand in greeting. The gesture feels weird and stilted, like they're in a badly choreographed skit. Enjolras nods.
Hey, he says.
Courfeyrac and Jeanne's hallway powwow means that the rest of the group has had time to assemble, so everyone gets a front-row seat to this inanity. From his peripheral vision, Grantaire can see Cosette mouthing something to Courfeyrac. He's not a lip-reader, but his best guess is, aww? He doesn't know how he's supposed to react to that, and it's some small comfort to see that, clearly, Enjolras doesn't know how either.
Great. So now that everyone's here, we can get started, says Combeferre smoothly,
and they both flash him a profoundly grateful look as Enjolras takes his place up front and Grantaire grabs a seat in the back.
So it turns out that World War I poetry is actually good.
Go figure.
Grantaire can see what Jeanne meant about the death of old-timey, but he's not sure he agrees. It doesn't feel modern, exactly. The writers are all named Wilfred or Vera or Rupert, and hell, most of it rhymes, like freaking sonnets or something. The world they're describing, on the other hand, it's like someone reached into an old photograph, snatched up all the young, smiling boys and girls in hats and knee breeches, and flung them into the apocalypse. Here are a bunch of kids born before cars, trying to describe what basically sounds like hell. And the only tools at their disposal are these fucking quaint rhyme schemes, and a language that wasn't designed to hold this kind of horror. Did they even have the word fuck back then? Grantaire's not sure. The result is nightmarish and riveting, and it feels true in a way that almost never works for him. He never made it through The Rime of the Ancient Mariner last year in English, and he laughed at the end of Romeo and Juliet. He's not a good person. But the book holds his attention for pretty much the whole meeting. Which is all kinds of fortunate. If the goal is to make it look like they're getting along, the fastest way Grantaire could break the illusion is by pulling his usual heckling routine. And he knows he probably won't be able to restrain himself if he listens to what people are saying. All right, to what Enjolras is saying. Zoning out is by far the safest route. It's for the good of the group. By this point, the members of the ABC know better than to ask his opinion on world matters, and although they're probably still curious about the pretend love story of the century, everyone's Pavlovian response is to ignore Grantaire during meetings, so it's not that bad. A couple of times, he gets the sense someone's watching him, but every time he looks up, the whole group is absorbed in their cause du jour. He's willing to admit that an hour reading about snipers and poison gas might be making him more paranoid than usual. The plus side is that time goes by pretty quickly. The downside is that with the end of the meeting comes the end of the meeting. Grantaire loiters in the back, still half reading as people start to trickle out. Joly and Bossuet both feel the need to wave goodbye at him, which is new, and, he assumes, yet another weird side effect of sham dating the group leader. He gives them each a nod. Musichetta laughs and winks on her way out the door.
Bye, Grantaire, says Cosette.
Marius stands a few feet away, trying not to look like he's waiting for her. He's busy inspecting a blank wall, so it's not exactly a perfect crime.
See you Monday,
she adds, and something about the tone of her voice and the set of her jaw makes it clear that Courfeyrac and Jeanne managed to brief her on their mission. He tries not to wince. He'd forgotten about government. That shit's not going to be a good time.
See you,
he says. Jeon hovers in the doorway. His face lights up when he spots the black and white cover in Grantaire's hands. He raises his eyebrows, and Grantaire gives him a thumbs up. Jeon nods, looking smug. In the meantime, Corfirok is clapping Enjolras on the shoulder, saying something Grantaire can't hear and probably doesn't want to. Enjolras rolls his eyes, but smiles, grudgingly by the looks of it. When Corfirok sees Grantaire looking over at them, he raises his voice to address them both. "Enjoy your weekend, you guys," he says, shooting inexplicable finger guns in Grantaire's direction as he backs out of the room. Jeon follows him, also doing the eye-roll and reluctant smile routine, which is a pretty common reaction when it comes to Corfirok. "What?" Grantaire hears Corfirok say, as the two of them start down the hallway. "Name one situation that isn't better with finger guns." "Yep, that's Corfirok," Grantaire mutters. By now, the only ones left in the room are Combeferre and Enjolras. They look up at him, which is fair, since Grantaire was talking to himself like a crazy person. Normally, he'd make some effort to cover for himself, but after everything else today, he is beyond petty mortal embarrassments. "What?" says Grantaire. "Like neither of you ever pretend you're narrating the movie about your life?" Combeferre, who probably organizes all his thoughts in carefully formatted, footnoted paragraphs, laughs. "Yeah, but not in my voice. Morgan Freeman, maybe." He turns back to Enjolras. "Remind me about that article I mentioned," he says. "I'm not sure where I read it, but there's only a couple of places, so..." Enjolras nods, untangling his backpack from a chair. "Definitely. Sounds like what we need." The backpack retrieval process takes a noticeably long time, especially considering the huge gulf of intelligence between Enjolras and a piece of furniture. It occurs to Grantaire that they're both dreading Combeferre's departure, and the conflict that's bound to start the moment they're alone together.
"Everyone's heading out, then?" says Grantaire,
desperate to hold on to Combeferre's calming presence as long as possible. There's got to be some way to game it so that the three of them walk out together. "Combeferre, you're parked pretty close, right?" he tries. It's a stupid question. Obviously he knows where Combeferre's parking spot is. There's no way either of them has forgotten the incident with Eponine last month. But Combeferre just shrugs a shoulder. "You two go ahead," he says. "I was going to walk to the library for a bit." If it was anyone else, Grantaire would suspect an ulterior motive. The town library is a few blocks from the school, but it's small and not well-stocked. Combeferre probably has a better selection of philosophy books in the back seat of his car alone. Maybe it's a nicotine-craving kind of thing, Grantaire thinks, where Combeferre needs to peruse a card catalog every few hours just to feel normal. He tries to casually ascertain if Combeferre's hands are shaking. No dice. After a round of have-a-good-weekends all around, Grantaire and Enjolras begin the walk back to Grantaire's van. The silence makes him twitchy, but he's not sure he can begin a conversation right now that wouldn't lead off with, "Hey, remember that time at lunch when you tried to touch me but couldn't manage it because apparently I'm made out of cat vomit? Ho-ho, there's one for the scrapbook, eh?" They're halfway across the parking lot, when out of nowhere, Enjolras says, "Is that a good book?" "Yeah," says Grantaire. And before he's thought it through, he adds, "You'd hate it." Which kind of kills that. He unlocks the van and they climb in. Grantaire clears off the passenger seat, throwing all the papers and empty boxes into the back, and silently daring Enjolras to criticize the mess. Enjolras doesn't, maybe just to be contrary. Instead, he takes a deep breath and says, "So, we need to talk about this." Grantaire's hand stills on his seatbelt. "Yeah, okay." He backs out of the space. "Also, I have no idea where you live, so..." "Left out of the parking lot, right at the third light, right on Miller, left on Hemlock," says Enjolras. "And I think we should have a system. Over the course of maintaining this, the word you're looking for is lie," says Grantaire helpfully. "Sham. Pretense. Charade, if you're feeling fancy." Enjolras powers through.
On some level, you have to admire the dedication.
Whatever, he says.
Look, if we want to pull this off, there's probably going to need to be at least a little bit of,
what? Says Grantaire.
From the corner of his eye, he thinks he sees Enjolras make some kind of gesture, but he doesn't track it too well because he is busy driving a car, hello. Give me something to work with here, dude. A noun. A syllable count. Rhymes with purple. Something.
Physical contact, says Enjolras, and Grantaire can hear the gritted teeth from here, like it is actually paining him to get the words out.
Grantaire sucks in a breath and says nothing.
It's just, Enjolras says into the silence, I can see so many situations where one of us would be uncomfortable with the level of touching or the nature of it, but maybe wouldn't feel like he could say anything or do anything without blowing his cover.
He sighs. There are about 1,000,000 consent issues, and if we aren't careful, someone could wind up feeling really violated.
Someone, thinks Grantaire. No prizes for guessing who. All of the vague phrasing in the world can't hide the fact that, apparently, Enjolras doesn't trust Grantaire to keep his hands to himself. Grantaire's knuckles are white on the steering wheel. He flexes his fingers and breathes out through his nose. Enjolras is fidgeting in the passenger seat. So I think... And he's still talking! Fuck his noble determination! Even Grantaire doesn't think he's bad enough to warrant this much distaste. It would be a good idea if we could have some kind of code word. So if we're in front of people and you... and one of us needs some space, he has a way to let the other person know without tipping off everyone to what's going on.
Grantaire snorts. His hands are still wrapped around the steering wheel in a death grip, but his voice comes out just how he wants it to, flippant and annoyed.
Well, someone thinks highly of himself.
What?
Want me to roll down the window so there's more room for your ego? Jesus. You're good-looking or whatever, but you're not a fucking Vila.
I literally don't understand what you're saying right now, says Enjolras, and Grantaire can hear the barely restrained frustration in his voice. Do you get what can we please have some kind of a...
Yeah, sure, dude, Grantaire sneers.
And when was the last time he was even this angry? Oh, right. Yesterday. In his car. With Enjolras. There is a definite pattern going on. Let's set up a safe word in case you can't handle being in the same 5-foot radius. How about Mondegreen? Boysenberry. Achromatic. Or hey, there's always, you're an incredible douchebag. Wait, no, that's like 4 words. Whatever fragile strand that had been holding back Enjolras' temper snaps. Of all possible things, why are you making this difficult?
Dude, says Grantaire,
I'm not going to jump you. At the same time Enjolras yells, For crying out loud, I'm trying to respect your boundaries!
Wait, says Grantaire.
What?
What? Says Enjolras. He sounds equally lost, which in this moment is a fucking achievement.
Then, the light's green. You can... There's a good chance it's been green for a while.
He hits the gas, so they don't have to find out.
Neither of them seem to know what to say for a few minutes. They pass Eponine's house and its ever-changing assortment of gaudy cars parked out front. They pass the field where Grantaire used to play soccer. They pass a lot of respectable-looking suburban homes, sprinklers arcing back and forth across gleaming green lawns and stretches of sidewalk. Grantaire's mind is reeling. Enjolras is not an idiot. He claims to believe Grantaire isn't one either, just lazy in the thinking department. Not like Grantaire has spent hours trying to puzzle out what the hell that means. But, Jesus, it would take actual brain damage to be worried about Enjolras trying to violate his boundaries. He doesn't want to think about it again. So, of course, he does. That awkward moment in the cafeteria. Seeing that look of uncertainty cloud Enjolras' face, weigh on his posture. Enjolras, who strides boldly forward in all things. What does it take for someone like that to show hesitation? The mere idea of touching Grantaire.
I just... don't see the point, Grantaire says, after a moment. Look, I promise I'm not going to do anything to you. I'm not some... He sighs heavily. And I know I can trust that you would never, to me. So if something comes up and you think we need to convince people,
Just do whatever you're comfortable with, and I'll deal.
No, says Enjolras.
That is a terrible plan. What if I'm comfortable going way further than you? How are they still talking? How are they still having this conversation? How hard is it to leap out of a moving car when you're the one driving? Grantaire eyes the door handle longingly. For one thing, he says, after a moment, I think most nuns would be comfortable going further than you. Enjolras starts. What are you trying to... Back in the cafeteria? You had to psych yourself up just to... And even then, you couldn't. Not sure who you think you're fooling, but you are not a good actor. Grantaire, on the other hand, has managed a pretty decent smirk, and his voice sounds wry, detached. The middle school drama department would be proud, he thinks. Enjolras throws his hands in the air. Yes, because like I just said, I'm trying to respect your personal space. What part of that is even hard to understand? The part where Enjolras is worried about Grantaire feeling violated. The part where his hesitation to touch Grantaire back in the cafeteria supposedly came not from disgust, but consideration. The part where Enjolras would assume all of this went without saying. Short answer, most parts. Sorry, my lazy intellect is just struggling to piece this together, says Grantaire. If it's going to make you feel better, fine, whatever. We can have a safe word. But I feel like a lot of shit goes without saying. We only need to keep this up in public, at school. So it's not like we need to go around, making out against a wall. His brain helpfully supplies. Your fingers in his hair. His breath warm against the junction of your neck and shoulder, right before his lips. Grantaire shivers. Stupid brain? What did he ever do to it? Other than several years of steady poisoning with drugs and alcohol. Whatever. He clears his throat, beats down the mental images with a mental club. But in terms of selling this, Grantaire gestures between them. We could pretty much stick to... hand-holding seems like a good bet. Grantaire bites his lip, very pointedly not thinking about Enjolras biting it instead. Assuming you're okay with it? It's fine, says Enjolras. Are you okay with hugging? No, says Grantaire. Enjolras doesn't push him for any explanation, which he appreciates. Friendly armor on the shoulder? Grantaire considers this. Yeah, okay. Your turn to suggest something, says Enjolras, and Grantaire is at a loss. They've covered most of the public affection stuff that isn't kissing, so what the hell is he even supposed to say? Obnoxious pet names? He volunteers after a beat or two. Fine, says Enjolras. Not regular bad, like honey or whatever, Grantaire warns. We're talking names science hasn't even invented yet. I already said yes. Something in his tone clearly adds, if you wanted me to say no, why did you suggest it in the first place? It's a fair point, but still. Enjolras should know better than to underestimate the depth and breadth of Grantaire's ability to annoy. You have no idea what you've unleashed, dude. I'm going to call you so many stupid things, he vows. It's like Pandora's box. If the box was just filled with words like muffin bear and button cakes. No, see, it's almost better if you do, argues Enjolras. Possibly just contrariness again. You're still pretending to be you. Grantaire thinks that if he was ever in a real relationship, he'd be too afraid the other person might take it the wrong way. But Enjolras takes everything the wrong way anyway, so there's a perverse kind of safety built in. Enjolras takes a deep breath. A peck on the cheek, he says. Grantaire can't imagine a universe in which it would ever seem like a good idea to actually kiss Enjolras. He can't imagine a universe in which Enjolras would ever, ever be willing to kiss him. He is sure of very few things in this world, but here is one of them. That shit is just flat out never happening. So, in the interest of science fiction, he mumbles, sure, why not? He thinks from the ensuing pause that maybe Enjolras wasn't expecting that. Fair enough, because what normal person would nix hugging and greenlight kissing? If other stuff comes up, we can take it on a case-by-case basis, says Enjolras. And if one of us starts feeling weird about anything, even stuff we've agreed on, they can use the safe word anyway, which we still need to choose. And truly,
Enjolras cannot be diverted. He's like a politically correct missile. Something better than Boysenberry. In case the handholding gets too intense, Grantaire can't stop himself from asking. Humor me, says Enjolras. Ugh, fine. Grantaire drums his fingers on the steering wheel. Dear, he says, finally. What? If one of us doesn't like what's going on, he can be like, okay, dear. To the outside world, it won't look suspicious, but for you and me, it'll definitely be weird enough to grab our attention. Yeah, okay, Enjolras says, after a moment. That's actually pretty clever. Actually? That sentence was a single word away from being a compliment. What the hell is up with that? Enjolras is losing his touch. Hey, says Grantaire. Speaking of the outside world, when are you going to let your friends in on the plan? Even with his eyes on the road, he can tell by the quality of the silence that something's up. It's not just the duration, it's the intensity. We can't tell them, says Enjolras, and Grantaire almost swerves into oncoming traffic. The fuck? He turns the wheel sharply and pulls over by the side of the road instead, puts the van in park, and turns to stare at Enjolras. The fuck? He says again, for good measure. Enjolras runs his hands through his hair. He looks miserable. In order for this to work at all, nobody can know, he says heavily. And you don't trust your friends? Says Grantaire. He feels irrationally angry on their behalf. I would trust any of them with my life, says Enjolras. And it should sound like the dumbest of teenage hyperbole, but this is Enjolras, so instead it's all quiet, heartfelt conviction. But Marius can't keep a secret. So don't tell Marius, then. I don't think the rest of them can keep a secret from Marius. If you just tell Jean, says Grantaire. Enjolras sighs. As if recounting a chess match, he says, Jean tells Courfeyrac. Courfeyrac tells Marius. Marius tells the entire school without even trying to. Feuilly. Feuilly has fourth hour with Marius. There's a lot of downtime, and Feuilly is not a good liar. Combeferre, Grantaire presses, and this earns a definite wince. It's the same as Jean, says Enjolras, resolute. Combeferre and Courfeyrac have been best friends for years. They don't keep stuff like that from each other. There's no way around it. He'll tell Courfeyrac, and Courfeyrac will tell Marius. Got it. Grantaire casts around wildly, trying to think of someone free from Courfeyrac's dark vortex of charisma. Joly, he says. Triumphant. Enjolras has the grim air of a man who has already examined every option, and found them all lacking. Joly tells Musichetta, who tells Cosette. Oh shit, who immediately tells Marius. In retrospect, that one's obvious. It's like 6 degrees of Kevin Bacon, but instead of movies, it's just lies and agony. I didn't think it would bother you that much, says Enjolras. Fiddling with the seatbelt. How shitty of a person do you think I am? Grantaire wants to ask. Instead, he shrugs. It's fine. I mean, this is going to make for a fucking weird couple of days, but shit, maybe it'll build character or something. A weird couple of... Enjolras echoes. He makes a strangled noise. It can't possibly bode well. Grantaire, he says slowly. When do you think prom is? Given Grantaire's attitude towards school functions, that's more or less a rhetorical question, and he lets his silence speak for him. Enjolras' face fills with a gradually dawning horror. Oh my god, he says. You have no idea, do you? Grantaire frowns at the road, reasoning it out. He doubts they'd hold prom on, like, a Wednesday. It's got to be on a weekend. Presumably not tomorrow, or someone would have said something. A week from now? Grantaire ventures. The look of horror in no way subsides. 2 weeks? Enjolras makes a sound halfway between a hysterical laugh and, well, actually, it is just straight up a hysterical laugh. How could you not know this? He says despairingly. It's been all over the morning announcements. We voted on a theme yesterday. Why? Says Grantaire. What? Why?
Enjolras scrubs a hand over his face.
Dude, talk to me. Use your words. This is disturbing.
Shit, 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 says Enjolras.
Outside of the taco incident, Grantaire's not sure he's ever heard Enjolras curse. His misgivings rise to a fever pitch.
Shit,
says Enjolras again.
I'd wondered why you... Shit!
Well, this explains so much. He stares out the window, or possibly he stares at it, like he's contemplating bashing his head against the glass. He turns to Grantaire, takes a deep breath.
Grantaire,
he says, mournfully,
prom is 2.5 months from now.
It's a very good thing they're pulled over and the car isn't moving. This would not be a good way to die.
It's March,
Enjolras continues.
How could you possibly think...
Grantaire snaps around. Dude, he says.
What have I ever done in my life to seem like the kind of guy who knows when prom is? March!
Enjolras repeats, voice half an octave higher than usual.
Well, I thought it was weird,
says Grantaire defensively.
But given that you and Corf had just been talking about it, I figured it had to be coming up soon. I mean, why even ask now if...
Because I wanted to plan ahead, says Enjolras. Which is maybe the first part of this whole adventure to make any sense. Enjolras probably plans out his underwear and socks days in advance. In a binder, with colored tabs.
Why didn't you mention that at the time?
Grantaire hisses. Enjolras squints back at him.
Well, you didn't let me get very far, he says.
And he doesn't even sound accusing. Grantaire stares bleakly forward. 2.5 months. It's some fucked up, ironic, play-acted version of a life Grantaire wouldn't even have fantasized about. Wouldn't have been able to concoct even at his most drunk and pathetic. On the floor of his room, with his head in Eponine's lap. Pet names. Pecks on the cheek. They're going to need to keep the lie going to so many people. Now he knows why Enjolras was so quiet at lunch. He was summoning the will to live. Grantaire closes his eyes, rests his forehead on the steering wheel, and breathes in deeply through his nose.
Enjolras is saying. Look, given that you didn't know that, if you want to back out of this, I'm not going to... I mean, you can. Back out, if you want to.
His voice is careful, hesitant. Grantaire twists his head to face him. Enjolras is fiddling with the seatbelt again. He closes his eyes again.
No, says Grantaire. Whatever, at this point, the damage is done. Might as well see this through.
He takes another deep breath. Eyes on the prize. Corfirok and Jeanne deserve a normal prom. Well, he thinks, for some definition of normal. 2.5 months is an insane amount of time, but Grantaire's endured worse, for longer, and for worse reasons.
Assuming you're still in, he adds, cracking an eye open. Enjolras looks back at him, levelly. I'm in if you're in, he says, and Grantaire laughs. Wow, he says. You were dedicated to the cause, dude. I will grant you that.
He puts the van back in drive, eases onto the road again. They're quiet for a minute.
You know, I think there might be a relatively painless way to do this, says Grantaire at last. I mean, it's not like a sham marriage or something. We sit together at lunch, do the minimum required displays of affection, and once a week we have a pretend date. Enjolras coughs. That works out to more than 10 pretend dates, he says.
Well, obviously we won't actually do anything, Grantaire snaps. Just in case someone asks one of us what we did last weekend. We can make something up each week.
We'll need to be careful, 'cause there are only 3 restaurants in town, and someone might notice if we're never where we say we were. So a lot of nights in, says Enjolras.
A corner of his mouth twitches.
Imaginary nights in. If anyone asks, you don't believe in feeding the slobbering capitalist hell beast of corporate America and the commercialization of love, says Grantaire. Also, none of the restaurants in town are vegan, so... I'm not vegan, Enjolras protests. Grantaire waves this aside. Yeah, but you probably believe in, like, vegan solidarity. Enjolras bristles, but doesn't contradict him.
We'll need to keep the details straight with each other, he says instead, and debrief every now and then.
Debrief.
No matter how high the stakes are, Grantaire can't help laughing at such a stupid word.
I'll meet you in the janitor's closet by the gym, he agrees. Tuesdays, 1:47 sharp. Make sure you aren't followed. Wear a disguise. Trust no one.
Is it too much?
Enjolras puts his head in his hands.
Probably, yeah.
Sorry, says Grantaire, which doesn't get much reaction.
Fair.
Why would Enjolras think he means it? I can give you a ride home from meetings. That's 20 minutes, 2 days a week. Penance, which has to mean more than an apology. It's an awful lot of time to spend alone together, but Grantaire got them into this mess. He can bear this much, at least. And however much Enjolras may hate him, it's a free ride. It's got to beat waiting around for your mom to pick you up.
Maybe.
Enjolras looks up at him, making Grantaire lose his train of thought.
And if we need to, we could, trade email addresses?
He finishes. And phone numbers, says Enjolras. Grantaire shakes his head. He likes his phone. He trusts his phone. He doesn't need to carry something in his pocket that could, at any moment, ambush him with Enjolras' voice.
Email's fine, he says. As far as this weekend, let's say you're coming over to my place. We'll order Chinese, watch some movies.
What movies? Says Enjolras, and then, preempting Grantaire's eye roll. I'm not poking holes in your plan, but we should have specifics worked out in case someone asks.
Who'd ask? Says Grantaire, with a snort.
Cosette? Musichetta? Barrel? Jolie? Bossuet?
Yeah, point.
Okay, so pick something. I don't care.
It should be stuff we've both seen, Enjolras muses. Which makes sense, except the Venn diagram of movies they have in common probably begins with Muppet Babies and ends once Enjolras was old enough to toddle away from the TV and start agitating for fair trade organic juice boxes. Grantaire isn't up on the latest sad sack, black and white, foreign films and documentaries, and there's no way Enjolras could tolerate anything with enough explosions to interest Grantaire.
Die Hard?
He suggests, just to be difficult. But Enjolras just says,
sure, double feature with Ocean's 11,
and Grantaire can't hold back his double take.
What?
Says Enjolras, maybe a little defensive.
I like heist movies.
No, that's fine, says Grantaire, and it feels like a huge admission of something when he adds,
me too.
Enjolras nods.
Okay then, sounds good.
And the problem is, it does sound good. All of the 1950s going steady bullshit holds no appeal for him, but that actually would be, well, kind of nice. No hassle, no letter jackets or malt shops, just Kung Pao Chicken and watching well-orchestrated robberies on TV, sharing a couch, maybe surreptitiously inching closer during the tense parts, arms brushing, and yeah, Grantaire is jealous of his alternate reality self. What of it?
You missed my street, says Enjolras.
And Grantaire forces back a groan because, of course he did. He's in the middle of executing a very sloppy 3-point turn when Enjolras says suddenly,
what did you mean, the damage is done?
Grantaire blinks.
You know, by now the whole school knows I asked you out. Some words tend to stick, you know.
Gay is a pretty sticky word.
No one's treating me any different, says Enjolras, sounding confused, and hooray for him.
Well, yeah, says Grantaire. They're terrified of you.
That's not, says Enjolras.
He stops, considers.
It's not the same. Most of them didn't like me to begin with.
His voice isn't hurt or proud. It's matter of fact. Grantaire wonders, not for the first time, if he's dealing with some kind of alien. Enjolras is the rarest of breeds, a teenager who genuinely doesn't seem to care what other people think.
Man, says Grantaire,
and he can't keep the admiration out of his voice.
You could teach a class on how to be a badass motherfucker without even trying. You and Jeon.
I thought Jeon was a legless gazelle, says Enjolras.
About that.
Grantaire doesn't love admitting he's made a mistake,
And, okay, especially not to Angelros. But he can't stand being this wrong about something this basic.
I might have jumped the gun there, he allows. That kid is a true Gryffindor. You should have seen him today. It was nuts. Attack mode.
What? Did someone insult Mary Shelley again?
Angelros's tone is wry, but also amused. Fond. Maybe even warm. This is what he sounds like when he talks about his friends, thinks Grantaire. It's a world away from that angry kid in detention, ranting about abstract concepts to the first burnout willing to listen, however mockingly. The ABC has been good for Angelros, he thinks. He wonders how much longer he can stretch this conversation.
No, actually, it was the guy who sits next to me. He was...
Grantaire stops. There's no way to tell the story without coming across like an incredible victim. His face heats.
I don't know. It's a whole long thing. But Jeon went toe-to-toe against him, didn't back down at all. The teacher tried to send Jeon to the principal's office, and he called Mr. Clark's bluff. You should have seen it. You would have been so proud.
Yeah, that sounds like Jeon, says Angelros, and Grantaire can hear the smile in his voice.
Glad to hear he's standing up for himself. I think he finds it a lot easier to fight when it's about someone else. Which is noble, but it can be frustrating.
Grantaire can't hold back his laugh.
Wow. Coming from you, that is quite the statement. What's that supposed to mean? Angelros snaps.
Grantaire bids a silent farewell to those 10 seconds of perfectly civil talk.
Rest in peace, friends. Your time came too soon. Nothing, he says. It's just, you're kind of the crown prince of fighting on other people's behalf, you know? Silence.
Even with his eyes on the road,
trying not to miss the turn again, shit,
it's not hard to imagine Angelros seething next to him.
Democratically elected representative of fighting on other people's behalf? Committee co-chair? City controller?
Is he trying to wind Angelros up, or calm him down? He's not even sure anymore. Angelros must pick up on this, because after a second, he sighs and says,
If you're insulting me right now, you're doing a terrible job, given that I can't tell.
He doesn't sound angry. He doesn't sound happy, either. Grantaire risks a glance to the right, and Angelros is rubbing his eyes, looking tired. Someone needs to make sure that kid gets enough sleep.
Not an insult, Grantaire offers. I'm only saying it's a good thing you weren't around in the days of slavery. There's no way you wouldn't have John Browned yourself to death.
There is distinct silence coming from Angelros's half of the car, which is a shame, because it leaves Grantaire rambling to fill the vacuum, and that can only end in tragedy.
Harper's Ferry? He's saying.
There's no reason in the world for Angelros not to get this reference.
Come on, they cover this freshman year. Best case scenario, you get your own catchy song. Even then, not like it's much comfort to your friends and family when you're a moldering in the grave. Wait, says Angelros.
You didn't... And Grantaire seriously can't hold it back.
Oh my god, dude, can you do me one small favor? If you want anyone to believe for a second that we like each other even a little, can you not look completely poleaxed any time I know a thing? It's fucking insulting.
Angelros coughs.
I wasn't talking about that, he says. You missed my street again.
Well, no surprise there. Grantaire pulls into the next driveway, rests the van around.
Hemlock, says Angelros helpfully.
I know, okay? It comes out much sharper than intended. He takes a deep breath and lets it out.
I know, I remember, just shit.
They loop back to Hemlock in silence. Grantaire's face is burning again. It's so unfair. Normally, he's a good driver. Normally, it's one of the few adult things he has a handle on. When he first got his permit, he and Eponine used to jump in the van and cruise down side roads for hours in no particular direction. They never got lost, because Eponine has a freakishly good internal compass. He remembers those first few drives, sipping his frozen Coke and humming along to her weird, angry music, trying to force the outsized grin off his face. He'd been so worried she would notice how pathetically happy he was at small things, that she'd reason it out and realize that Grantaire was no longer the kind of kid who did stuff like this. Hang out with kids his age and drink shitty Slurpees from 7-Eleven. Their friendship got easier once he discovered that a fair number of her metal songs are actually about, like, fighting dragons. What makes Eponine cool is her attitude, not her taste. Case in point, lingering crush on Marius Pontmercy. When he makes the turn onto Hemlock, he gives the steering wheel a huge, dramatic flourish, bringing one hand over the other in a windmill motion and splaying his fingers. "The long nightmare is almost over," he assures Enjolras. "Let's get you home." Enjolras directs him to an unremarkable-looking suburban house at the end of a cul-de-sac. Grantaire isn't sure what he was expecting. A castle? An estate? An underground secret rebel base? But it doesn't seem fitting for someone so memorable to live someplace so mundane. Grantaire puts all his focus into easing into the driveway, as if he can make up for everything that's happened on this train wreck of a drive home by nailing this one last move. He puts the van into park. "See you Monday," he says. "And, enjoy our imaginary date tonight, I guess." "Tonight doesn't work for me," says Enjolras.
Grantaire fights down a brief, irrational pang of hurt. How is he being stood up in a fake relationship?
What, does Enjolras have another, way more fun imaginary date to go on?
Why is every step of this so goddamn difficult?
Grantaire wants to ask. Instead, he gives Enjolras a flat look. "You do realize this is pretend, right?"
"Obviously," says Enjolras,
in such an acid tone, Grantaire can't quite hold back his flinch. Enjolras sighs. Marius and Combeferre are coming over to work on a lit project. They're going to notice if you're, you know, not there on a date with me. How's Saturday?"
"Fine, sure," he says, and Enjolras moves to unbuckle his seatbelt.
"Oh, one more thing," says Grantaire. "Just, like, to be clear. If you offer me money again, I'm gonna punch you in the jaw." Enjolras blinks. "But you don't believe in this kind of stuff at all. It's not fair if you don't get anything out of it."
"Sheer joy of fucking with people?"
Grantaire offers. It earns him a distinctly unimpressed face.
"Look, if you're so obsessed with the idea of equality or whatever, we can always leave it at, I hereby have the right to someday ask you out of nowhere for my own bizarre, slightly sketchy favor."
At the word sketchy, Enjolras starts. "If there's anything you're not comfortable with, we can go over this again. I really, really don't want..."
"Jesus, will you give it a rest?" says Grantaire.
"I get it." He snorts. "My bathing suit area is safe with you." Enjolras's eyes narrow. "Is that a crack about me being a virgin?" he says. And Grantaire chokes on nothing.
No? No, it's not. I actually didn't know you were one, so, thank you for somehow managing to make this even more awkward than it was. That is a skill."
"So why do you keep acting like it's funny? Because you're acting like I'm worried about my fucking virtue, when I don't have any evidence you can even deal with holding my hand."
Enjolras looks at him like he's insane. "We already held hands. Today, in the cafeteria. It was literally 3 hours ago." "No, I held your hand," Grantaire corrects. "You had your hand held. What's the difference?"
Does Grantaire seriously need to spell this out? "I'm still not sold you could touch me voluntarily if there wasn't, like, a gun to your head, so..."
Enjolras unbuckles a seatbelt in a flurry of motion, looking very determined. And then the world goes upside down, because Enjolras is reaching out, and his fingers are shockingly warm against the skin of Grantaire's inner wrist as the pulse beneath it races like a frightened rabbit. Their faces are just a little too close together.
"There," says Enjolras shortly. "I'm holding your hand. Okay?"
"That's my wrist," says Grantaire, and, while true, it's just about the dumbest thing he could have said, because Enjolras lets go. He looks almost sheepish, but it could be a trick of the light.
"It's okay. Practice makes perfect."
And maybe Enjolras is embarrassed, because, instead of rising to the bait, he just levers open the car door, saying, "See you Monday."
"See you," Grantaire echoes.
He watches Andoros heft his backpack on one shoulder, make his way down the driveway, and disappear into the offensively banal house.
Well, he thinks, this is going to be fun to explain to Eponine.